Hello and good afternoon, UTD. This is Kara Santucci with the Mercury Midday News, which I'm going to make every effort to say Midday News instead of Morning News, which was our old title. You are listening to Radio UTD, the student-run radio station for the University of Texas at Dallas, streaming live from the Student Union located in Richardson, Texas. You were listening to Sunny Days, which is actually a song from an EP produced by a student here at UTD, Maya Piatta. The EP is called Sunny Days. We'll be playing some of that music throughout the show. If you're interested in learning more about Maya and her music, search, Strike Up the Band on utdmercury.com or search Maya Piatta in our search bar, and you will be able to, you will be able to learn more about her and check out her music. It's really great. And it's also appropriate because as we go into talk about the weather, we do hope that we can go back to sunny days soon, because today the high is 47 and the low is 36, and it is totally cloudy with a 20% chance of rain. Friday, you're looking at 52 to 37 with partial sun. Saturday, 51 to 46, cloudy. And Sunday, warm again, 71, 60, cloudy. That is what we're looking at for the week. I'm Kara Santucci. As I said, I'm the managing editor of the UTD Mercury, and I'm operating solo today. But we will have Nidhi Ghatge, our editor-in-chief, back in studio soon. The Dow is down 5.46, NASDAQ is down 4.63, and we are going to read a couple campus events for y'all to look out for this week. We have the War Party Concert, which is held in the SSA, the new building, 12.471 from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. It's one of the top bands in DFW, according to the Dallas Observer. Check out that on the comment calendar. There's also student volunteerism, Pet Pals, Student Services Edition, second floor is where they're going to meet. It goes from 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. And also there's the healthcare policy and the Trump administration Q&A that could be really important for students who rely on the ACA in order to get their health insurance. That will be in the Davidson Auditorium in the Jindal School of Management from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. So in just a minute, you can look at the comment calendar to get dates for those, because I've had a crazy week, so I've not been able to write down the dates for that, but I apologize for that, but you will be able to find that online. So before we get into our main section of the show, which will be two guests we have to talk about the immigration ban, we're going to listen to an audio package produced about the immigration ban. That was made by me and in conjunction with one of our reporters, Ian Siemens, about the protests that went on at DFW Airport. So take a listen to that. We're going to hit you up with some music throughout the hour. And when we get back on air, you will be listening to me, a representative from the MSA and a representative from Texas Rising at UTD. So stay tuned.
Donald Trump signed an executive order that denied admission to citizens from seven majority Muslim countries, suspended refugee admission for 90 days, and stopped U.S. green card holders from re-entering the country. That last provision was later halted by four federal courts. The next day, protests erupted at several U.S. international airports, including JFK, San Francisco, Denver, and Dallas. Thousands of people flocked to DFW Airport, some of them UTD students. Anu Amandi is a computer science junior who attended the march.
I was reading about how, like, specifically at DFW, there was a grandmother who was detained since the morning, and her, like, three granddaughters were, like, waiting at the airport, and there were just all these different stories of someone who was coming to visit their sick mother, and, like, someone's parents who were coming, and all these families that were separated, and I was, like, very affected by it, because I personally am, I'm a green card holder, but from India, so it doesn't directly affect me, but I was like, this is crazy. I can't believe this is happening. So when I saw that there was a protest and there was something I could do, I was like, I need to go to this.
When White House Chief of Staff Rince Priebus remarked to CBS that Pakistan may soon be added to the banned list, Amandi was inspired to get involved.
Like, I have friends who are from Pakistan and have Pakistani passports and are green card holders, but, you know, they're afraid to go visit their grandparents or, like, literally leave the country for anything just because they don't know if they'll be let back in. So, like, it definitely does affect a portion of our student population.
Protesters held signs and periodically chanted for the release of those who had been detained at the airport.
I think the sign that I held said, "When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty," which is a Thomas Jefferson quote, mm-hmm. Which I think was really the mood of a lot of folks there who had never really come out to protest like this before.
That's Harish Chowdhury, an international political economy sophomore who also attended the event. Trump's executive order has been called a Muslim ban. In a White House press release, Trump denied the label. Nancy Fairbank, a political science senior and protest attendee, does not buy the White House's denial of that term.
I think that with this executive order, President Trump is playing intentionally to people's fears about those that practice Islam as a religious faith. While the order does not specifically mention banning Muslims, it's clear, I mean, it's factual, that the people in these countries are Muslim majorities. And Rudy Giuliani even said in an interview that Trump said, "We want to have this Muslim ban. How do we make it legal?" Mm-hmm. And you make it legal by taking out that language about being Muslim and just make it banning people from these countries.
Ever since the election in November, Fairbank has noticed a rise in student activism on campus.
I think there is a relatively active or becoming more active community at UC Dallas that wants to attend protests like this, that wants to be politically active and stand up for marginalized communities. So I was surprised and impressed with how many other students from UC Dallas that I saw there personally or that I know went.
In the wake of the executive order, many immigration lawyers offered their expertise pro bono at international airports around the country, working in the airports in an attempt to obtain the release of those who were detained. Amandi, a student government senator, encourages students to seek the legal services available on campus.
We have immigration lawyers on campus that are there for any students who have, like, mm-hmm. questions about this, although it's very new and people don't have a lot of information. I'm sure if students have some questions, they should definitely reach out to them. They're there for their, they're there to serve the students' needs.
For the Mercury Midday News, I'm Kara Santucci. Additional reporting by Ian Siemens.
Hi, I'm Miriam Percival, and I'm the news editor at The Mercury, and you're listening to Mercury Midday News on Radio UTD.
Wasn't so sweet. sickle cell mangoes, give me some sweets.
Hi, I'm Bharat Armili, and I'm the web editor for the UTD Mercury, and you're listening to Mercury Midday News on Radio UTD.
Hello, everyone, and we are back on air. This is the Mercury Midday News. Quick reminder, the views expressed on Radio UTD are solely those of the DJs and the guests and do not reflect the views of Radio UTD as a whole or of the University of Texas at Dallas. And like we always say, don't sue us. The joke will be on you because we have no money. If you'd like to call in, our phone number is 972-883-6305 or I am Radio UTD on Skype, all one word. And please only audio call us on Skype. Yeah, those noises you're hearing is because one of the mics is broken. Forgive some of the background sound, but I am sitting in studio today with Christian Briggs and Bilal. Can you say your last name for me?
Ayub.
Oh, it's as easy as I looked. Yeah, what am I doing here? Okay. So if y'all could introduce your names, your majors, and who you're representing today.
My name is Christian Briggs. I'm a computer science major, and I'm representing Texas Rising at UTD. We're the student organization level of Texas Freedom Network.
My name is Bilal Ayub. I'm really happy to be here today, so thank you for Kara for having us. I represent Alpha Lambda Mu, Alif Lam Mim, the Muslim fraternity on campus that was founded here 3 years ago. I also represent the UTD Muslim Council, which is comprised of the Muslim Students Association, Islamic Relief at UTD, and Mu Delta Alpha, the professional women's sorority. Oh, and I study business sometimes.
When you have time, yeah. You dabble in business. Christian does CS. Y'all are both juniors.
Yep.
Correct? Okay, cool. So let's jump right into it. They are here today to talk and have a conversation about the recent executive order regarding immigration regulation. So just to start off, we need to address to our listeners what exactly this executive order said and did. So I have the order in front of me. If y'all want to field that question, you can, or I can summarize briefly.
I'll let you summarize since you have the actual paper in front of me.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to like pick and choose specific words, but basically it was for 90 days, incoming people, refugees, people, originally those who had green cards as well were included from a specific seven countries. Was it seven?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, were prohibited from entering the United States. There was a ban on those people coming in. Later, four federal courts redacted the portion about green card holders, but the ban is still in place for people who don't have green cards coming in. That would all be accurate.
Mm-hmm. And there's a temporary stay on the executive order.
Oh, there is a term. Okay, so what exactly does that mean, Christian?
It means that for the people who have arrived so far, who were physically in the, already, you know, had their visas approved, have all their papers run through, they should be accepted into the country. However, a lot of Border Patrol or the people in, mm-hmm. who work at the airport and customs, I can't remember exactly what their
CPB.
Department is. Thank you. There you go. many of them have been reported by the by the ACLU to not be complying with the stay from the judge. So
okay.
That's very problematic.
anything to add to the ban below?
The way it was quoted, so there's what the ban is on paper, and then there's the perception that the nation has of it in the media, and the way it was stated in the media was initially as a Muslim ban. So effectively, to the nation's psyche, that's what it is. It doesn't matter what it says on paper.
Right, and that's where it gets a little more hairy, right? Because the actual wording of it doesn't... Like, the wording of it includes, like, a non-discrimination clause. However, you have instances where Rudy Giuliani is talking to the press saying, this is a Muslim ban, like, mm-hmm. don't confuse this. However, in the writing of the executive order, on its face, like, prima facie, it, like, looks, like, sort of constitutional. Like, it's something that's, like, very confusing to mm-hmm. a lot of people, I feel like, because the way it's being applied, people would argue is not constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
When it's dealing with religion, when they're saying we're giving preference to Christian refugees, when they're saying it's a Muslim ban, that's very different, even than the wording of the order.
Mm-hmm.
So you shook your head. What do you want to say about the constitutionality of the on its face?
Well, I would just mention, of course, I think I already talked to you about it, but the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 clearly deems this illegal. You're not allowed to specify a country to block or ban, and I personally haven't heard this in my circles, but I know there's a lot of discussion going around where they're saying, you know, Barack Obama did something similar, which is absolutely not true. He just made the visa vetting process more stringent, which is very different than a full ban on people coming into the country.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the campus connection to this ban. Bilal, have your groups discussed this situation together? Like, has the Muslim Council discussed the situation?
We have, and we've been talking about it for a while, just as students and citizens of this campus and as comments. And nobody really knew what we expected. It's like that GIF from Arrested Development where he pulls out the dead dove in the bag, and it's like, I don't know what I expected. But
and the bag says dead dove on it.
Yeah, it says it right on the front, but that's kind of the way it is with this presidency. We're like, oh, we'll give him a chance, but oh, well, of course that was going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, it's really dealing with now mitigation, consistently fighting this from a litigation perspective, which is why pulling up all the historical acts passed, issuing stays, filing court orders, and even for the very individual cases at every single airport, going to the airport, meeting with the families, filing individual writs of habeas corpus for everybody, getting legal representation inside is what it takes. And it's going to be a lot of little small battles over the course of the next 4 years with this executive order, with many more to come, I'm sure. And that's what it takes to keep this all together. Without doing that, we can argue the big picture, but the big picture is that it's here now. The nation's psyche isn't changing. Everybody kind of expected this. We didn't want to say it. But now we got to continue fighting.
So what does it mean to each of your groups to look ahead at the road and know that there's going to be things that you disagree with, that you find unconstitutional and wrong, and you're going to be fighting these disparate, small legal battles over it over and over again? Is that discouraging at all? Or is it just kind of like, that's what we have to do?
It's certainly discouraging. It heavily harkens back to the era of Bush. So I do have a lot of alumni helping us in our strategy of organizing young people, since they have an understanding of what this, you know, disdain for the, you know, your executive looks like, and how you can use that for organizing purposes. Of course, it's discouraging, and that's why it's really important to focus on, I guess, as locally as you can, because at the local level, you can actually get some victories and feel like you're a part of something. So I feel like that's where our focus really needs to be. And not just that, as you can see, I guess the more progressive side of things, they don't have a ton of actual politicians in their corner. And so it's important for us to mobilize more progressive candidates from the bottom up, which starts at, you know, your school board and your city council, because that gives them credence to go run for state office and state office to national office. And so that's the only way we can really rebuild, is to be at that local level and involved. And what a lot of people don't fully realize is that the local level really does have a lot more power than you might think, because if the state or if the federal government don't explicitly take it, it's theirs.
Absolutely.
So
I guess looking, although, so the most recent elections coming up will be May 6th, I believe, is the date.
Yes.
But looking, I guess, a little more immediate, what are some actions either of y'all have talked about or would encourage people to get involved in to combat this executive order and potential executive orders that come next? I guess on a student level, what could the average student do now or in the next few weeks?
First and foremost, as Christian said, get involved in your local politics. Figure out who's running in your local office. Figure out who's even representing you today, and you don't know their names probably or what they stand for. That first and foremost is the first line of defense for every American citizen, for every student of this campus. If you're not doing that, you're absolutely failing in civic engagement. We can argue the big picture. We can argue what having a Trump presidency or a Hillary presidency or a Bernie presidency would have looked like. But we have the president we have now, and the things that will affect you day to day are those local offices. So one, get involved there. Number two, pay attention. Pay attention to what's going on very subtly, because it's very easy to look at all the airport protests, see cycles of people getting held and then not held, not really know what's going on. And in the meantime, Trump replaces the director of the National Security Council, and nobody notices that. So pay attention to all these little things that are going on, because those are the small things that are going to continue to affect us.
Right.
Know that they're happening, and then just expect them to happen and be aware of that. And the third thing is just talk to people. As long as we're continuing to talk between all our communities, talk to the Black Americans on campus who have a completely different perspective of the situation. Talk to the Muslims on campus, the Jews who were targeted just 2 days ago, the LGBT groups, and everybody on campus individually. The benefit that we have of a diverse campus is we have all these different perspectives that we can share. When we learn from those, then we can make better actions in our civil and political lives.
Well, and also in regards to the student body, I think the most important thing is as you mentioned, there's a lot of, I guess, great diversity on our campus and a lot of different communities and groups on our campus. And the biggest issue is that we need to get together. These organizations need to see each other's progress and humanity as a part of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, when you're a small group, you don't have any allies other than other people who are willing to help fight with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're going up against a mountain, you have to have friends. So I guess forming those coalitions, forming those bonds, working together is the only way to really big way to do it. And that's what a lot of my organization is taking the headway on, which is organizing these groups. So if you or any of your friends have a group that you might be interested in, let me know. but also, again, getting involved in your local government is critically important. So, yes, make sure you're registered to vote, because a lot of people don't know that every 2 years, if you didn't have any type of if you didn't vote in any way, shape, or form, the records are purged, meaning you're no longer
right.
registered. So we have voter registrars at all of our meetings and all of our events. I'm a registrar for both Collin and Dallas County, and our campus is split. That's why you don't have voting locations on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
So getting with our organization, we will drive you to the polls. Get out there. There is no excuse. If you said you don't know, well, then you should have looked it up, and we'll give you all that information, and if you get in contact with us, you'll have a constant steady stream of when, where, and how. In regards to what you can do right now to actually fight back, as I said, those local elections are coming up, and we need those local candidates. They need block walkers. They need people to go door to door, because a lot of people don't get involved in those elections, and progressives, if they really fully came out of the woodworks, we would be able to do well, just because people in general don't vote, and so we just have to outshow up the, you know, far right.
Right.
And so coming together and really pushing that, there are local candidates that I suppose seem very promising. My organization's not allowed to, you know, fully endorse anyone,
okay.
but you can certainly talk to me about my personal preferences, and I might point you into a direction.
Look, and I would also remind the people who don't always know who they're voting for, and a lot of people locally, when they try to get engaged, they'll hear from their friends, who should I vote for, and they'll vote for that person. And sometimes people are worried about, they're like, are they really going to stand for what I think they're going to stand for? The good thing about local politics is you can keep your representatives in check. You can't keep the president in check when he's elected and he's in there for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And when the constituency is now an order of magnitude where you're so much more insignificant. But with your local offices, it is very, very easy and accessible to call these people, to meet with them face to face, to tell them what the issues are that are affecting you in your lives, and to keep those policies in check.
Right, and something that I've heard is pretty important is getting in touch with state representatives, you know, who in your district represents you in the House mm-hmm. and the Senate. But something that's also important to do, even if it doesn't maybe exact change the way that you want it to do, is get them to go on record mm-hmm. for their opinion on, mm-hmm. for example, this immigration ban on the executive order. Mm-hmm. That's just something that, like, I've read is important to mm-hmm. get your representatives mm-hmm. to do.
And they're not going to do it the first time, but you have to keep calling. Get your friends to call. Call every day, because it only takes you 5 minutes. It's the same amount of time that you spend extra sitting on the toilet in the morning when you're playing Candy Crush. It's just, might as well get out a little earlier.
Yeah.
Give them a quick call, leave a voicemail. And when you do that day by day, I swear it makes a difference. People understand from people who have worked in congressional and Senate in local offices, people pick up those phones and they take down tallies of who stands where and what issue, and how many people are waiting for a response. And if enough people are asking for a response, you will get a response in a statement. And if you don't like it, you call back and you tell them you didn't like it. It's communication 101. We talk about in our classes, we talk about when we do all these group projects here, but
business major.
Yeah, but what about our civil society? Why don't we do it at that level? And just because it's a little bit less visible in your eyes, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So keep looking and stay aware and stay engaged.
So do you think part of the reticence for people to get involved comes from a lack of tangible change, I guess, right after you do it? Is that what people are... Because you said it, you know, calling a representative, it will seem really insignificant and small, but they actually do record it. You just may not know exactly how they're receiving this phone call and what kind of change that can make.
Yeah, I think sometimes people feel that way. But you can easily look up the numbers of what it takes to sway a vote in a local office. It doesn't take that much for a local election, especially city mayor, city councils, local state house. It doesn't take that much. You can look up the numbers. It's in the couple thousands. How many students we have on this campus who care very strongly about one issue and are eligible to vote and are constituents and have a zip code in these people's districts? You just got to tell them. You give them your zip code. You say, I'm in your district. This is what I stand for. And you get your friends doing that, and that's what makes change. It's not going out rallying in the street for Bernie or for Hillary or for Trump. What it takes is calling these people and calling to action. If you're not getting involved, you're forfeiting your own agency in that system.
And
Go ahead.
I just wanted to touch on the, because you said going out in the streets. I'd like to, you know, give a tad point to that too. There's a lot of people, I see them going out to these protests, etc. There's nothing wrong with a protest, but that's only one tool out of so many.
Absolutely.
That's for organizing people, getting people rallied up, but you have to do step number two.
Right. You have to mm-hmm. take that momentum with you, right?
Well, take that momentum with you, and when you go to those protests, don't just go to them. Go in there, have voter registration cards with you. I mean, you mm-hmm. can get the white mail-in ones and just hand those out like candy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Go in with information. Go in with a group that has these information pamphlets, etc., to really mobilize those folks. Don't go alone. Gather a community, because you can't do something by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to these protests, don't just go to take your Snapchats and your Snapchats and your Instagrams, but go to actually effect some change. And so mm-hmm. finding an organization on campus, and there are many who are willing to actually get together and mobilize for these issues, is important. And on top of that, especially with these individual issue protests, it's really important, again, to organize together, even if people don't fully agree with you on everything. We're fighting for human rights. This isn't the line couldn't be thicker and clearer than ever before. I mean, in certain political party platforms, they have, you know, conversion therapy right in there. That's considered torture. That's right in their platform. Matter of fact, the president is an advocate for torture. That's incredibly serious. And of course, there's wild multitudes and plethoras of issues with that. And we need to band together and see that these individual issues, if we don't, you know, if we don't band together and fight together and understand that we have a common goal, and if we meet it, we'll all win, then everything will fall apart. So it can't just be advocacy for that one issue that gets you going. Because I know most people, when they first get in, at least interested in politics, it's they have one or two important issues. Well, that's not how reality works. Everything's interconnected. Mm-hmm. Everything's tied together. Absolutely. And so understanding the full reality of how that operates is also important. But what I see too often in progressive spaces is people just sitting there and talking, trying to discuss ideas, etc. Ideas are awesome, but the facts are already out. We know what's right. There's no discussion anymore. Science has already clearly stated what is and isn't, and studies and research has been very conclusive, especially on things like climate change and etc. How our education system needs to be handled. So many. So we know what's right now. We don't need to discuss our ideas as much. Our biggest focus needs to be physically getting out there, physically getting doing the work, getting votes, making people realize that just because you don't feel like it, it doesn't matter. You're not fighting just for you. It's for, well, the several million people in our country and the billions of people outside of our country that rely on, well, the most powerful nation on earth, whether you like it or not, to operate appropriately and to act with humanity.
All right, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll be back. We're going to discuss a little bit about the American Vanguard white nationalist flyers that went up and continue to talk about the immigration ban. You are listening to the Mercury Midday News here on Radio UTD.
Got a confession, I made a mistake. I let my heart speak louder than my brain. I know there's no way, no how, and I had my doubts, and they're bringing me down, down. Lipstick stains on your collar, the smell of her perfume, red flags turn white as soon as I hear you. Up to now, and now I can't believe my own two eyes tell me this ain't real life, 'cause you're with her and I'm here standing in the rain. And I can't believe my own two eyes, how could I have been so blind? I'll never fall in love again, never fall in love again.
Hi, I'm Bharat R. Milley, and I'm the web editor for the UTD Mercury, and you're listening to Mercury Midday News on Radio UTD.
Hello, and we are back on the air. Oh man, I love when people flash us thumbs up when they walk by. That's so exciting. We are broadcasting from the Student Union live in Richardson, Texas. We are on Radio UTD. If you'd like to call in, it's 972-883-6305. Or I am Radio UTD on Skype, all one word. Important reminder, the views expressed on Radio UTD are solely those of the DJs and do not reflect the views of Radio UTD as a whole or of the University of Texas at Dallas. So we are back in our conversation on the immigration ban with Christian Briggs, representative of Texas Rising at UTD, and Bilal Ayub of the UTD Muslim Council.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Alpha Lambda Mu.
And Alpha Lambda Mu. So transitioning from before the break, we were talking just about, you know, the immigration ban, what people can be doing in response. Something I want to bring up is, and I want to ask, direct this question to Bilal because we talked about it yesterday. Mm-hmm. So two nights ago, flyers from this white nationalist organization called American Vanguard posted their flyers promoting their message around campus. And there's been an administrative response. There's been a student response. Student government has spoken out. And Bilal spoke to me on behalf of the four majority Muslim associations on campus. But something you said that I thought was interesting that kind of ties into as well, like what we were talking about with action on the immigration ban, is you were saying you thought you were disappointed in the student response to that incident. So can you tell me a little bit about those feelings?
Yeah, we can talk about my feelings. the sentiment comes from not necessarily from me or from individuals on this campus, but this is an outsider perspective to UT Dallas. And I know students at other campuses, larger campuses, with bigger student organizations and higher levels of student engagement and activism, that generally feel like UTD is a somewhat more apathetic campus. And if we look at ourselves critically, I think at some level we have to agree with that. You don't see mass protests happening out of the student union. Like, where are we going to do it on the ping pong tables or the pool tables? It's like, so there's a lot of factors that play into that. It's a smaller campus, a commuter campus. We're more international, more diverse. We don't have as much polarization. There's all these factors that play into it, sure. But we still have thousands and thousands and thousands of human beings on this campus who care about issues. And I think the environment that has been fostered here so far is one that has not necessarily promoted, but has simply been complacent to apathy. And it takes, look, if we're going to get through as a resilient campus community over the next 4 years, it's going to take us working together and doing way more than we currently are for all issues across the board, as Christian said in the last segment. Standing with everybody in order to make change happen and to keep our campus the way we want it to be. So when these posters went up two nights ago, it's a little sad to see, one, basically everybody was targeted. They had no discrimination in their targeting. It was Islamophobic. Ironically. It was anti-Semitic. It was anti-Black. It was just extremist in as many ways as possibly could be. When you have all these facets on there, why is it that a student community cannot come together and simply say, we don't like what's happening here, we'd like the administration to say something about it? That's it. That's all we need to see happen. That's not it, but that's a first step. Why is it that we don't see the administration giving a clear response to this? And I know it's only been a couple of days, and we can give them a couple more days, but at least the students from the student body, I just talked to a member from BSA, the Black Student Alliance, just before I came here, and they're not happy about this at all. I haven't talked to anybody from UTD Hillel yet, but the UTD Muslim Council, of course, isn't happy about this. It's not a nice thing to do. Nobody likes it. Oh, we're all against it, so why aren't we saying more? And why aren't we calling on our administration to say more? And that's for one reason only. And we know if we were to substitute this poster for some other extremist poster, be it gang-related or ISIS-related, this would be on national news by the evening. We'd see it on 6 o'clock Fox. But just because it's a white nationalist group and it was kind of low-key and on some tweets and got taken down very quickly, like, oh, okay, we can ignore this. And we've never felt threatened by students on this campus. We've never felt targeted or that this isn't an open and diverse community. But these probably weren't students, and we should be resilient to that. And we need to show that. We can't just be complacent with it.
Anything to add, Christian?
I know that they, whenever they were here, apparently, like, I was walking around putting up my club's posters when they were putting up theirs. I didn't,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I happened upon one in Johnson. But, of course, I highly suspect these people were not UTD students. I just know that especially after Trump got elected, we did have a heavy influx of incidents and incidents on campus.
Right, there were posters right after his election that were promoting. They had like the swastika on it.
Yes,
I believe. Yep. I saw
yes.
Those.
And also, I mean, I worked in facilities. We had a lot of, because people they take their political activism to the toilet and they draw swastikas all over the bathroom walls. We had that happen too. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, as I guess a relative leader in a lot of the progressive groups, I got a phone call after phone call of people reporting negative instances on campus, off campus, that they either did or didn't report to Title IX just because they didn't feel safe doing that. I remember, you know, when the armed protest happened in Irving, and the, you know, campus sexual assault is still an issue, and people try to gloss over that or act like it's not happening. We have, you know, a lot of, what is it? I'm pretty sure white nationalists were in the southern Dallas, too, and majority of black community. It affects our student body, and I constantly get calls about this, these types of situations. And so getting these coalitions together is really important because we're all threatened. They're attacking all of us. I mean, this organization is also anti-LGBT, if you wanted to throw another identity in
there. If you look at their webpage, they have a lot of qualifications and membership, and that is one of them.
So it's just, we're all being egregiously attacked by people who have gained political power in our country. I mean, look at Steve Bannon's wonderful political position, and a lot of their congressional friends are completely complicit, especially given the heavy contrast between what they said during the election season and what they're saying now. I mean, Paul Ryan is just bowing to it. And that can't be ignored. I mean, when they have gained institutional power, that can't be ignored. And those organizations and institutions can't be respected any longer.
Do you agree with Bilal that you're disappointed in the student or administration response to this event?
I feel like it could have been a little bit harsher and a little bit more drastic. I do know that we're doing the We Are UTD event on the 8th, and the SOC and the administration really pushed all of, like, our event through as fast as possible. So at the very least, they're making sure that we have our local community outlet there as fast as possible. So they're letting students organize as quickly as possible. I just feel that it would be in the school's benefit if they gave a harsher reaction, especially given how diverse our campus is. And I know that they gave a reaction to Trump's executive order as well. I know we've already discussed that.
President Benson released an email.
And so it's just, given our campus's diversity, they need to be a little bit more proactive to these types of situations. And I guess I'm trying to speak to in a light that might convince them of it, but it's just, if they want a student body that is respectful and utilizing the administration's engagement tools, such as student government and et cetera, that are official channels, instead of just blindly being angry and lashing out, as some campuses have in the past, it's important for them to be very proactive against these types of situations, be more heavily engaged within the groups, organizations, and communities that are being affected and are being targeted. I know that, like, even in our student government, and I don't necessarily think that it's not their fault. It's our lack of engagement with them. They don't look like a lot of our campus. And I know that that's a key problem for, like, that they're very aware of it. The president has, you know, made that issue.
You're saying demographically?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. A lot of them are, even if you want to look at, like, break it down to the majors and religion and ethnic groups, etc., isn't reflectionary of the rest of the campus, and that does have subtle they're subtle influences.
Well, that's
there.
Not to say it's I don't have the demographics and I can't look back, but I have been to SG meetings, and it's not all these white, you know, fraternity members. That's represented.
I'm saying they're aware of the problem. I've spoken to the president. She understands that community engagement with student government needs to get better. And so they're not ignoring the issue, and they're definitely trying to address it.
Do you think if the student government was more demographically representative of UTD, they would see more community engagement?
I don't think so.
Oh, really? Really? I feel like it might, just because student government has the ability to organize groups together. I know that they're going to be trying to boot this back up again, where they had because there's over 3,000 student groups, and many of them they need to do more. trying to get them engaged with each other, is very important. Right. The president's prioritizing that right now, mm-hmm. which is awesome. I'm just
the
saying.
The president of student government or the
yes,
president?
Okay. Student government.
Oxley Padigella.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so that should have been an issue beforehand, like beforehand, and that needs to be a little bit more pressed than it is right now, just because, you know, lack of community engagement. Well, a lot of students are in student organizations. I mean, for everything from friendship to whatever the student group does. Mm-hmm. So getting those groups together to create events and create activity on campus is very important. And that requires some communication and coalition building. And that's something that the student government can do. Mm-hmm. And if I feel that if more groups were more diversity of student groups and student communities, no matter what identity basis that might be from, were there, that would have been a bit more prioritized.
Right.
In the past.
I want to ask, I know we're nearing the end of our time, but I want to ask Bilal why he responded not really.
I would have to disagree, purely just my opinion, is I feel the lack of representation, the lack of engagement with student government, the other way around. The lack of representation of a diverse student body on student government is merely a symptom of a broader problem. And I think that goes back to the apathy we discussed before. I think a lot of people join student government, honestly speaking, if you talk to them individually, because they want something on their resume. That doesn't apply to everybody, but that's of course a factor for students, especially when we're in an environment where we want to get out of here and we want to get jobs. Mm-hmm. It's a factor for everybody. So it's not a bad reason to be on a student government. Mm-hmm. However, I feel that students having a lower level of complacency is a precursor to having a more diverse and representative student government before any of those actions are taken, before more student organizations can work together and we can see more productive efforts done for the student body.
So we're kind of arguing chicken or the egg. So Bilal,
yeah, that's saying, what I'm saying. We have the same
apathy. Look, at the end of the day, both efforts are going to be important. There's got to be an external effort and an internal effort.
Yeah, and that's what
student government
agree
should
on
work
is,
harder, and students got to work harder.
It's a two-pronged issue.
Of course. Yeah.
Many of them are. So before we wrap up, play some music and let y'all go about your day, is there any final thoughts y'all would like to add on the immigration ban, the white nationalist flyers, anything that we've had discourse about today?
We've seen a lot of attacks on, multiculturalism and diversity in general. Of course, and I'll beat the dead horse, you know, some more. You got to get together. These communities we need to pull together, organize together, make events together, and even more importantly, get out and vote. And these organizations need to not just be, you know, for sit down and chats and friends, because people, I mean, as I said, for the LGBT community, they torture on children is definitely something that is within, you know, certain parties' platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Banning people from various countries, that's definitely on folks' agenda. And as you could see, a lot of Congress just either bent over, said nothing, or supported it. That's not okay. We're being, an enemy is forming, I suppose. And I'm not going to, you know, say that, you know, the world's ending. There's definitely things we can do. So
right.
Don't panic, because that's the last thing we should do. Because we know that we can win if we get involved. In this election in particular, we had less voter engagement than in the 2008 and 2012 election. So obviously people were unaware that, and I heard this so many times, well, what's the difference? Is there any governing difference? Is anything really going to change? It's like, you didn't remember the recession, did you? Something definitely changed. I know, especially for my family, we got off of, unemployment and had jobs. And I'm able to be here. I mean, my great-grandmother was an undocumented immigrant from Mexico and a refugee from Lebanon. Of course, different great-grandmas.
Yeah,
but, so it's just, and, you know, things weren't easy, and I'm here now. And also, in regards to all the people, and I see this all the time on social media, trying to, and I said this a while ago, trying to criticize international students in particular, let me make this clear. For people who are from this, especially in the state, international students pay significantly more than you do in tuition. They are the only reason why many of you can even go to college. They pay more so that you can pay less. Don't criticize campus diversity. If just the reason of kindness isn't good enough for you, then you know what? You wouldn't be able to afford college if it wasn't for them willing to pay more for you to go here. So, also that.
Right. Bilal, any final thoughts?
I think a lot of what Christian said really resonated, and I want to drive home the point that everybody should be coming together. Come out to the We Are UTD event and just see the energy there. I don't care if you're college Democrats, college Republicans, Muslim, Jewish, Black, White, or if you're from the American Vanguard. If you're coming out to that and you're standing with everybody, you're observing, and you just feel that energy and take that to heart, then
produced by Kara Santini.
Oh, then hopefully that affects you in some way. So the only reminder I have is something that one of my teachers had shared with me, not teacher from this campus, but a teacher shared in points of crisis, especially, I think this is relevant, and that's to never underestimate the power of your own conscience, and that applies to everybody. I'm a blind optimist. I think a lot of what's happening now is expected. I wouldn't say necessarily that an enemy is forming so much that an enemy is surfacing, or that an issue is surfacing, and this is just constant stuff we have to balance and deal with. And what you can do as an individual is realize what your internal state of your heart is day to day, given each action. When this executive order comes out, you read it, you see the reactions, you see what's happening. You can take that to heart and see what that means to you. What does that feel like? And really buy into that. It's easy to get caught in the signal and the noise. But if you understand what it means to you as an individual, then you can talk to other individuals. You can relate, and not in just like-minded ways, but like-hearted ways to come together and make change. That's what you can do as an individual, and you have to be very conscious of that.
All right, thank you so much, Christian Briggs and Bilal Ayoub. I really appreciate you guys coming on the show. We Are UTD event, that's next Wednesday at 4 p.m. on the North Mall.
Yep, 4 to 6, the North Mall is that area with the little fountains right next to Founders.
Texas Instruments Plaza, I believe it's actually called.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the more you know. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back next Thursday at 1 p.m.
By Kara Santucci and co-host. The Mercury Midday News is produced by Kara Santucci and co-hosted by Nidhi Gottke. The MMN is a converged product of The Mercury, the student-run newspaper at the University of Texas at Dallas, and Radio UTD. Music credits, Ben Sound, and PurplePlanet.com.